Okay, we're picking up on page 552 or 553, and it's Pirkei Avos, Perek Beis, Mishnah Tes. It's chapter 2, paragraph 9. In the previous four Mishnayos, we quoted various statements from Hillel. The majority of the Mefarshim understood that we're talking about Hillel HaZaken, the famous Hillel the Elder, who was the companion of Shammai. So now on page 552, Perek Beis, Mishnah Tes, we're told as follows. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Kibel Mehillel u'Mishamai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai received the Mesorah from his Rebbeim, from Hillel, and from Shammai. Hu haya omer, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai used to say, Im lamadta Torah harbe, if you've learned a lot of Torah, al tachzik tova la'atzmecha, don't take credit for yourself, don't talk about how wonderful you are because you learned so much Torah, ki lechach notzarta, because you were created for that purpose. As you were, you're not doing anything, again we'll elaborate on this in a few moments, but in other words, you're not doing anything extraordinary, you can't pat yourself on the back and talk about how wonderful you are because you learned so much Torah. L'chach notzarta, your purpose in the world is to learn Torah, so you're just doing what you're supposed to do. You know, you're fulfilling your obligation as opposed to doing something extraordinary for which you deserve particular credit. We commented briefly on the organization of this Mishnah a number of Mishnayos back. As we had pointed out, the first Perek is really laid out in chronological order. It starts with Moshe Rabbeinu receiving the Torah at Har Sinai, and it brings us all the way through Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, the father of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, and then the beginning of Perek Beis continues with that chronological presentation with Rebbe, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, and his son, Rabban Gamliel. And then, as we noted, we abruptly go back in time to the time of Hillel HaZaken. And we explained that basically what the Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos are doing is they're setting up a chronological presentation, but so to speak, with a fork in the road. Because Hillel HaZaken had two major Talmidim. On the one hand, Hillel HaZaken had his own son and grandson who continued to be his Talmidim, and the Nesiim, the heads of Klal Yisrael, the heads of the Sanhedrin. Hillel had a son Shimon, who in turn had a son Rabban Gamliel, the first Rabban Gamliel, who in turn had a son Shimon, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who in turn had a son Gamliel, who in turn had a son Shimon. It was pretty easy to figure out, you know, which family you were from, but they basically kept repeating the same names generation after generation. So that was on the one hand. Those were the biological descendants of Hillel HaZaken, who assumed the Nesius, who were in charge of the Sanhedrin and were essentially the leaders of Klal Yisrael. But as we see here, Hillel HaZaken also had another Talmud, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was not Mishpacha. And as the term Rabban indicates, Rabban is the term which is always used to indicate that he's the head of the Sanhedrin. So in other words, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, even though he wasn't from the Mishpacha of Hillel, he wasn't from Hillel's family, he was a student of Hillel, and somehow managed to be in the position of the Nesius, of the head of the Sanhedrin, and the head of Klal Yisrael, despite his not really being part of the Mishpacha. So where does he fit into this picture? How is it that somebody who's an outsider, even a great outsider, comes to be part of the royal family, so to speak, and becomes part of that chain of succession, even though he's not really part of the family? So let's talk a little bit about the biography of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in order to try to understand where he fits into things. And I think it's fair to say that even among extraordinary people, the people we're learning about in Pirkei Avos are extraordinary Tanoim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is extraordinary even among the extraordinary. An individual who probably is single-handedly responsible for saving Torah Judaism after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Many of us are familiar with the story which is most famously recounted in the Gemara in Gittin. It's one of the stories that's oftentimes learned or told on Tisha B'Av, about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and his encounter with the Roman general who ultimately becomes the emperor, Vespasian or Aspasianus. The story goes that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a prominent figure in Klal Yisrael, prominent Gadol b'Yisrael, at the time during which the Romans were besieging Yerushalayim in the revolt that would ultimately lead to the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So we're talking around the year 68, 69, 70 of the Common Era. It seems pretty clear that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai at that time was not yet the head of the Sanhedrin, for reasons that we'll discuss in a few moments, but he's clearly a very, very prominent individual, prominent Talmud Chacham. So the siege is around Yerushalayim. As we know, both from the Gemara as well as from other historical sources, there's major infighting within the Jews who are in Yerushalayim. Some of the Jews want to fight against the Romans till the death. The Gemara tells the story how there was a group of Jews in Yerushalayim known as the Biryoni, the Zealots. They were so bent on fighting against the Romans that they burned down the storehouses of food that the Jews themselves had stored up in Yerushalayim. So you say, why would Jews destroy storehouses of food that was collected by Jews for Jews? So basically they wanted to force the hand of the Jews in Yerushalayim to make them desperate enough that they would fight against the Romans. A lot of the Jews in Yerushalayim said, we don't want to fight against the Romans. You know, our Krav Maga skills are not really up to the task. You know, they're big, there are a lot of them, they're a major world power. We're going to lose. What's the point of fighting if we're going to lose? And then there were some individuals in Klal Yisrael who said, no, we've got to fight to the death. So this was raging within Yerushalayim. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was of the opinion that it's better to capitulate and to surrender to the Romans before they destroy everything. If we surrender and we capitulate, at least we'll be able to salvage something. The Biryoni, the Zealots, were not allowing any Jews to leave Yerushalayim because they were afraid that they would defect to the Roman side. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai pretended to be dead. And his two Talmidim, Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yoshua, who we'll read about in the next Mishnah, basically set out the rumor that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had passed away, and they put his live body in a coffin, and they started to carry the coffin out of Yerushalayim. They got to the walls of Yerushalayim, and the Jewish guards said, where are you going? We're going to bury Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. They initially, they're suspicious. They say, okay, do you mind if we just put a sword through the coffin to make sure that he's dead? This is what the Jews said. Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua said, what are you talking about? You know, it's the Gadol Ador. You're going to stick a sword through the Aron, through the coffin, to make sure that he's dead. It's a bizayim. It's a terrible thing. Okay, they bought the argument. So Rabbi Yochanan's body was taken out by Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer, and instead of going to the Beis HaKvaros, instead of going to the cemetery, they went straight to the Roman camp. They come into the tent, how they managed to do this I'm not sure, but they come into the tent of the general Vespasian Aspasianus, who's leading the siege against Yerushalayim. They open up the coffin, and out jumps Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he says, Shalom Aleichem, O King, Shalom Aleichem, O King. Vespasian says, what are you talking about? I'm a general. He says, you're general now, but in a few minutes you're going to become the emperor of Rome. And lo and behold, the sentry comes running in a few moments later and says, the emperor back in Rome just passed away, and they're calling Aspasianus back to Rome to assume the position of being the emperor. Right? So Aspasianus goes back to Rome. He leaves his son Titus or Titus in charge of the siege. And we know that it's ultimately Titus Arasha, who destroys Yerushalayim in the Beis HaMikdash. But before he goes back to Yerushalayim, Aspasianus turns to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and says, wow, I'm really very appreciative of that wonderful prediction. What do you want? You know, I'll give you three wishes. Whatever you want, I'll grant your wish. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked for three things. The most famous thing that he asked for was Tein li Yavne v'chachomeha, give me the town of Yavne and the Chachamim who are there. It's a little town southwest of Yerushalayim. I'd like to reestablish the Sanhedrin over there, you know, so we can keep at least the Sanhedrin going. I'd like you, says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to Vespasian, I'd like you to make sure that the line of Rabban Gamliel is protected, because after all, it was that line which was the line of the Nesiim, from Hillel through Shimon through Rabban Gamliel, through Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, etc., etc., etc. Even though it would be the natural thing for the Romans to wipe out all of the descendants of Hillel, because they, after all, they were the royalty of the Jewish people. And when you crush the revolt of the Jewish people, it means part of that is you crush the royal family. Even though that would be the natural thing to do, I want you to spare them, says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. We'll come back to that point later on, because it's important in terms of understanding the history over here. And finally, there was the holy Tana, Reb Sadok, who was fasting constantly that the Beis HaMikdash should not be destroyed. I'd like you to send the doctor to take care of him, because obviously he's very, very weak and emaciated as the result of all of his fasting. Those are the three requests that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made, and those three requests are granted. Chazal, by the way, in the Gemara in Gittin, some of the Rabbanim criticized Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. You know, you're standing there in front of a station, so ask him to spare Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash. He's giving you three wishes. So, Yavne, you know, the Shalshelis, the Rabban Gamliel, Reb Sadok, what are you asking these little things for? Go for broke. You know, ask him to spare Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash. So the Chachamim disagree about whether Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was correct in terms of what he did or not. Some say, you're right. You know, the Ribbono Shel Olam sometimes causes even great Chachamim to make mistakes. He really should have asked for the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. And then other Chachamim say, no, what are you, crazy? You know, you're going to ask for such a big thing, so Vespasian is going to laugh at you. He's going to say, what are you talking about? I'm having a whole siege to destroy Yerushalayim in the Beis HaMikdash. That's not possible. And he's going to wave his hand, and you'll get nothing. You know, tofasta merubo lo tofasta. You can't bite off more than you're going to be able to chew. So he asked for something reasonable that he thought that could actually be granted by Aspasianus. Be that as it may, that's the famous story about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, in which really single-handedly he probably saved Yiddishkeit, you know, from being destroyed together with the Churban Abayis. Who was this Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? So Chazal tell us that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was zoche to tremendous arichas yomim. He lived for a long time. He was zoche to live for 120 years. And Chazal tell us that basically he didn't start learning until he was 40. It's another Rebbe Akiva type story. Again, it's not clear whether Chazal mean that he was totally ignorant until he was 40, or just, he wasn't as involved in Torah study until he was 40. But basically, from the time that he was 40, he began learning in tremendous earnest. And then, at the young age of 80, he set up his own yeshiva. So for the last 40 years of his life, he was training the tremendous Talmidim, some of whom we're going to learn about in Pirkei Avos. I think the message of the story is, you're never too old, right? Started learning in earnest at 40, became a Rosh Yeshiva at 80, and, Baruch Hashem had this tremendous hashpa, this tremendous, tremendous influence on the future of Klal Yisrael. He was one of the preeminent Talmidim of Hillel HaZaken, as mentioned over here in this Mishnah. In other words, when he began learning at 40, the man to whom he attached himself primarily was Hillel HaZaken. Now Hillel HaZaken himself was zocha to tremendous, tremendous arichus yomim, tremendous longevity. The tradition we have is that Hillel himself lived to the age of 120. And if you start crunching the dates over here and just trying to figure out when everybody lived, it would appear, although we don't have exact dates, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai became a Talmud of Hillel towards the end of Hillel's life. Because again, just to make the dates work out, Hillel must have been a pretty old man by the time Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai began learning at the age of 40. We see the lifespan of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai extends through Hillel's great-grandson. Right? In other words, he's a contemporary of, he's still alive, when Hillel's great-grandson is alive and is active, so it would seem that he began learning by Hillel when Hillel was already advanced in age. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Sukkah that there was no area of human knowledge that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was not proficient in. And it goes through a long list. He knew Tanakh, he knew Mishnayos, he knew Gemaras, he knew different Midrashim and things like that. A very, very long, exhaustive list of areas of Torah learning in which Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was proficient. But then the Gemara goes on to list various areas of secular knowledge in which Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was also proficient. All kinds of interesting things, you know, the language of birds, you know, different things about trees, you know, all kinds of different things that I don't think we understand 100% what they're all about, but, you know, tremendous breadth of knowledge in both, Torah knowledge as defined narrowly, as well as a lot of things about the world that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, says the Gemara, was tremendously, tremendously proficient in. So this is an individual who learned by not just the Gadol Ador, but somebody whose name is recognized as one of the Gedolei Kamadoros, you know, Hillel HaZaken, who was acknowledged as one of the great Gedolim throughout generations, and somebody who himself was just a master of everything, somebody, you know, one of these kind of people who just knew everything without really having any qualifications in terms of that. When the Beis HaMikdash and Yerushalayim were destroyed, and the Sanhedrin moved to Yavne shortly thereafter, it seems that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai became the Nasi, the head of the Sanhedrin, at that point after it moved to Yavne. Why didn't Rabban Gamliel become the Nasi at that point? Again, let's just review over the family line of Hillel HaZaken. So again, Hillel HaZaken had a son, Shimon. Shimon had a son. This Shimon, the son of Hillel, does not seem to have stepped into the Nasius. Again, when we spoke about this last year, we pointed out that particularly because Hillel lived for such a long time, you know, it could be that he outlived his own son, or that his son didn't have a lot of time, you know, to be able to really step into that role after his father's death. So he had a son, Shimon. Shimon had a son, Rabban Gamliel the first, who was a Nasi during the period of time that the Beis HaMikdash stood. So that's Hillel's grandson. Rabban Gamliel had a son, Shimon. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel the first, again Hillel's great-grandson, who was the Nasi of the Sanhedrin at the time that Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash were destroyed. This Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel was one of the Asara Harugei Malchus. He was one of the 10 martyrs who were killed by the Romans. The story which we read about both on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av describes how he and Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol were killed at the same time. A terrible, terrible story, right? The Romans cast lots, you know, who should be killed first. If you think about it, it's, you know, from the Romans' perspective, you understand why they picked Rav Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol to be martyred at that time. They were the Nasi of the Sanhedrin and the Kohen Gadol. They were the two most prominent Rabbanim in Klal Yisrael. So, you know, the Romans, the Rishoyim, you know, wanted to make an example of these two great individuals. So, you know, you understand from their perspective why these would have been the two people that the Romans would have taken. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, so, was martyred right around this time that the Beis HaMikdash was falling. So in other words, we appreciate to a very great extent the request that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai makes of Aspisyanus, save the line of Rabban Gamliel. It's reasonable to assume that Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel was still alive at that time, because again, the siege had not been completed. Aspisyanus was going to go back to Rome. Titus was going to come and complete the siege around Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash. So it's Titus ultimately who oversees, it seems like, the murder of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol. So when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made the request, it sounds like he was saying, please leave everybody alone, even leave Rabbi Shimon Gamliel himself alone. That part of the request was not fulfilled, but the rest of the family seems to have been left alone. So maybe that part of the request of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to the Romans, don't wipe out the entire family, you know, that part seems to have been fulfilled. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel has a son, Rabban Gamliel. This Rabban Gamliel, later we read about as being the Nasi of the Sanhedrin when it's in Yavne. So the question is, why wasn't there a direct line of succession? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is murdered. Why doesn't his son, Rabban Gamliel, take over the Nasius at that point? It seems like it's at that point that... It could be.
Maybe because he had made the request and he oversaw the whole shift into Yavne, maybe he was his idea.
Right. So it could be a couple of things. Again, we can speculate over here. But it does seem as if historically the way the Nasius went is that you had Hillel, you had Hillel's son Shimon, who may or may not have been Nasi, Rabban Gamliel the first, the grandson of Hillel, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel the first, the great grandson of Hillel, and then there's a break in the family. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai becomes the Nasi now that the Sanhedrin has moved to Yavne, and then at a somewhat later point, Rabban Gamliel, the great great grandson of Hillel, steps back into the Nasius, taking over what had been his father's position. So there's a break between father and son. That seems to be the most reasonable way of understanding what's going on over here. Why the break? So again, one can suggest that Rabban Gamliel, the younger, was just traumatized. One can suggest that either the Romans or Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wanted to play it safe. In other words, you know, Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash had b'shes been destroyed. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was in the Romans' good graces, because after all, he had made this prediction to Aspasianus that came true. The family of Rabban Gamliel was certainly not in the good graces of the Romans, because after all, they had been the leaders at the time the rebellion had taken place against the Romans. Rav Shimon Gamliel had been martyred. So it could be that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai told Rabban Gamliel, lay low for a little bit, and, you know, when the time comes, you'll ascend to the Nasius as well. The Tiferes Yisrael, Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz, suggests another explanation. Again, it could be that they're all true. He says, it could very well be that Rabban Gamliel, the son of the martyr Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, was not particularly old. You know, he might have been a child, for all we know, when his father was martyred. We don't know how old Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was when he was put to death. So let's say, for argument's sake, that Rabban Gamliel isn't even bar mitzvah yet, you know, when this traumatic destruction of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash takes place. Right? So he's not in a position. He's going to become the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, the leader of Klal Yisrael, particularly in a time which is such a crazy, tumultuous time. I mean, there's a lot to ask of, a 10-year-old under any circumstances, but under these circumstances. So it could be there was also a decision made by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai or others, I'll step in to the Nasius as a custodian, I'll keep the seat warm, so to speak. And then when the time is right, when Rabban Gamliel is old enough to be able to step back into that position, of course we'll give back the position to the family, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, as the trusted Talmud of Hillel, was trusted that he wasn't going to start usurping the position and taking it away into his family. So that all seems to be what's going on over here. And again, it speaks volumes about the character of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He was not an opportunist. You know, somebody else in that position might have very easily said, okay, the family of Hillel HaZaken is out, my family is in, you know, I'll put my family or my protege or somebody else, will take over the Nasius. No, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai takes over the position, keeps the seat warm, but, you know, when the time comes, it goes back to the family of Rabban Gamliel, and we don't find any statement in Chazal of any kind of fighting or machlokas or the like, you know, that takes place in this period of transition between Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabban Gamliel, who takes over after him. Everything really seems to go very, very smoothly. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai put into place various takonos, various enactments, in order to ease the transition from the pre-Churban era into the post-Churban era. Again, this was a momentous, traumatic time in Jewish history where the Beis HaMikdash has just been destroyed. And now all of Klal Yisrael is trying to figure out, under the threat of persecution, how to deal with this change in events. So there are various takanos that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai puts into place in order to remember the Beis HaMikdash and to carry that memory forward into this new era which is unfolding. I'll just give one example, something that we do to this day. According to Torah law, the Lulav and Esrog are only picked up on Sukkot on the first day of Yom Tov. Right? If you take a look at the Pasuk in Chumash, it says, "Lekachtem lochem b'yom harishon pre'etz hadar kapos tmar v'nafetz avos v'arvei no'achal." You should take on the first day of Sukkot Lulav and Esrog. According to Torah law, that's the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog. It's a first day of Sukkot mitzvah. That's it. There's only one place where we take Lulav and Esrog for the duration of Sukkot according to Torah law, and that's in either the Beis HaMikdash, according to most Meforshim, or according to the Rambam, the entire old city of Yerushalayim, while the Beis HaMikdash is there. Okay, so it's a special Beis HaMikdash halacha that we take Lulav and Esrog for all 7 days of Yom Tov. The Beis HaMikdash falls, comes Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he says, in memory of the Beis HaMikdash, we're going to start taking Lulav and Esrog all 7 days of Yom Tov, you know, regardless of where we happen to be. We should never forget that special element of the Beis HaMikdash, you know, in which Lulav and Esrog played such an important role. And that's just one example of the kind of takanos, the kind of enactments that were introduced by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Obviously, we have to adjust to this new reality, but at the same time, says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, we should not forget the way things were. We should keep the memory of the Beis HaMikdash alive.
So it's the Rabbanon.
In other words, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you know, instituted as a din de Rabbanon, and halacha lemaisa, there are certain leniencies with Lulav and Esrog during the rest of Sukkot versus Lulav and Esrog on the first day of Sukkot. You know, the quality of kashrus that we need for the Dalad Minim is not as high a standard. You don't have to be an owner of the Dalad Minim during the rest of Yom Tov. You don't have to, you know, make a kinyan on it. So, you know, but the idea, you know, the concept that we should do something to memorialize the Beis HaMikdash is very, very much the you know, the position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and to some extent that's how he's trying to get Klal Yisrael through these very, very difficult times, you know, in which you know, the whole Klal Yisrael is adjusting to the loss and the lack of the Beis HaMikdash. You know, not only has he preserved Yiddishkeit by moving the Sanhedrin to Yavne, and preserved, by the way, the chain, the family of Rabban Gamliel, otherwise the Nesias would have disappeared entirely, and that was obviously something that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was very, very focused on, not to let that happen. But he wants to put things into place that we should move on without the Beis HaMikdash, but never forget the Beis HaMikdash. You know, to do both things simultaneously, to cope with the loss, but to not, you know, forget about the way things were, and to yearn for a time where the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt, and we'll be able to put all of these things that we had back into place. So this is the greatness of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. If we spent a little bit longer on his biography than we typically do on the biographies of the Gedolim that we encounter here in Pirkei Avos, it's because there's a lot to say. I mean, he really, again, it's not an exaggeration to say that he saved Yiddishkeit in a very, very great way. What does he have to say? So there's one statement from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai here in Pirkei Avos, and in light of everything that we've said before, the statement becomes that much more poignant. Im lomadata Torah harbe, al tachzik tova la'atzmecha. If you've learned a lot of Torah, don't take credit for it. Don't think about how wonderful you are. Ki l'chach notzarta, because that's the purpose for which you were created. Now, once you learn a little bit about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and what he knew and what he did, the statement becomes that much more poignant. In other words, you know, if a Stam Schlepper, if a nobody gets up and says, you know, if you learn a lot of Torah, it, you know, you don't think it makes you a special person. All right, you know, so we take that statement with a grain of salt. Okay, who are you to say, don't think that you're a great person? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and this the classical Mepharshim point out on this Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, as per the testimony of Chazal, left no part of Torah or general knowledge unlearned. He knew it all. That's what Chazal say about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So when such a person says, "Im lamadet Torah harbe," if you've learned a lot of Torah, he knew what he was talking about. He learned a lot of Torah. This was not just some guy off the street, you know, who was making such a statement. Somebody who knew everything said, you know, even though one can learn a lot, and, you know, he was too modest to put it in the first person, but he could have said, even though I've learned a lot, you know, even though I know everything, which would have been a true statement, don't think that it makes you a greater or a more special person, because that's your task here on this world. Your job is to learn Torah. That's why you were placed on this world. So all you're doing is fulfilling your task. Why does fulfilling your task, you know, make you this, you know, this person who can pat themselves on the back and be very, very proud? The one statement that we have in Pirkei Avos from Yochanan ben Zakkai is a tremendous statement of anivus, a tremendous, tremendous statement of modesty and humility. And again, we know, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, that great leadership and anivus and modesty are two things that in Klal Yisrael, at least, you know, go hand in hand, you know. And we appreciate Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai with all of his accomplishments and all of his knowledge and all of that. We see from here his tremendous, tremendous anivus, his, you know, tremendous modesty as well. This idea of having a sense of mission and realizing that when you accomplish, you know, you can't just pat yourself on the back, but this is the reason that you're here in this world, is something that finds its expression among Gedolei Yisrael throughout the generations. There's this one story, a more recent contemporary story that comes to mind, which has a little bit of a Lower East Side connection. Reb Zev Siegel, Zichrono Livracha, who was here, many of us know, had extensive interactions with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zichrono Livracha. And at one point, Rabbi Siegel said, he said this publicly, I think it's online, I think he made a video for Chabad, if I'm not mistaken. At one point, he, you know, the Lubavitcher Rebbe had given him various tasks to carry out in Soviet Russia and other places where he was engaged in all kinds of clandestine activities on behalf of Klal Yisrael. And at one point, he basically went back to the Rebbe and said, you know, I'm tired. I've been doing this for a while. I'm, you know, it's very, very difficult for me to carry out all of these things. So Lubavitcher Rebbe looked at him and said, Rabbi Siegel, do you made a contract with the Ribono Shel Olam for an easy life? You know, in other words, this is your task. You're here. You're in this world. You know, you have things that you know, by virtue of being in this world, you have jobs. You have things that you have to carry out on behalf of Klal Yisrael, on behalf of Torah, on behalf of a mission of Torah. And just do it. You know, you're tired. You know, okay, you're tired. No, so you're tired. So why does that stop things? You know, this is your mission. This is what you have to do. That statement is very much in the spirit of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai as presented over here. One of the Mefarshim, I forget the name, one of the Mefarshim on this Mishnah has the following insight into Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's statement. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai essentially is saying as follows: I may have learned a lot of Torah, but it's not a question of how much you've learned. It's a question of the potential that you have and living up to that potential. Somebody else may have learned less Torah, but because I have the capacity to learn so much, and because I have the capacity to do so much, so says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that now places an obligation on me to learn and to accomplish all of those things. That's really the message of a kilachach nobsarta. The more potential that you have, the more is demanded of you, the more is expected of you, the more, you know, the more that you have to carry out. So don't pat yourself on the back, because you may have done more than the average person, but if you've only accomplished half of your potential, and the other person has done less but has accomplished the entirety of his potential, so in a sense that person is actually ahead of the game vis-a-vis where you are. If you have great talents and great abilities, that means that you have great responsibilities in order to carry these things out. That's also implicit in the position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. There's a beautiful comment by Rabbi Chaim Voloshin on this Mishnah, and he ties it in to a statement the Gemara makes in Erevin, which we might have heard of, and he gives it a little bit of a new twist based on the statement of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Gemara Masechta Erevin records a very fascinating debate that took place between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. It says that they debated this for 2.5 years. Is it better that man be created or better that man not be created? Right? Noach lo la'adam shenivra, noach lo la'adam shelo nivra. I don't know how you debate that issue exactly, whatever proofs they brought back and forth, but they fought over it for 2.5 years. And finally, the conclusion, says the Gemara in Erevin, after 2.5 years of discussion, which we don't know what discussion was, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai agreed that Noach lo la'adam shelo nivra, usually translated, it would have been better for man not to have been created. But now that man is created, let him examine his deeds and try to do the best job that he can. If you were a pessimist before, you're probably more of a pessimist after reading this particular passage. Right. Well, what do you mean? They fought over it for 2.5 years and they came to the conclusion it would have been better off for man not to have been created. What on earth does that mean? You know, and besides being depressing in its own right, it sounds a little bit like kfirah. I mean, it sounds a little bit like heresy, because after all, who decided to make man? The Ribono Shel Olam. So you think you know better than Hashem? In other words, after 2.5 years you came to the conclusion, Chas v'Shalom, that the Ribono Shel Olam made a mistake in making man? What on earth does that mean? What does the whole thing mean from beginning to end? So Chaim Voloshin, very, very briefly on this Mishnah, says people mistranslate that Gemara. The Gemara says, Noach lo la'adam shelo nivra. Noach lo doesn't mean it would have been better that man would have not have been created. It means it would have been easier had man not been created. And that for sure is true.
Man would prefer not to have to be born.
Right. In other words, life is a lot of hard work. Right? Right. You know, being in Gan Eden, you know, getting Torah from the Malachim, you know, it's a good life, right? You come down to this world, there's a lot of hard work you have to do. For sure, Noach lo la'adam shelo nivra. Chas v'shalom, you know, God forbid to say that it would have been better for man not to have been created. But it would have been easier for man not to have been created. It would have been much easier had we just, you know, absorbed all of the Torah we needed to know through osmosis. Had we not had any issues with parnasa, with health, you know, all these sort of things, you know, not to have to worry about all the things that are of this world, of Olam Hazeh. You know, it just, you kind of slide into the shiur in the morning, you just lay back, you know, get all the Torah hand-delivered to you. Well, that would have been wonderful. Life isn't like that. Noach lo la'adam shelo nivra. It would have been easier for man not to have been created, but that's not the mission. The mission is that you're here to work hard and to learn Torah despite difficulties, and to give the Klal Yisrael despite difficulties, and you got to do what you got to do. That says Rav Chaim Voloshin is ultimately what Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai is saying. Ki l'chach no tzarto. You know, the reason you're here is to learn Torah, and even though it may be difficult, and even though it's not the easiest thing in the world, you know, it's not something to be proud of when you do what you're supposed to do. It's, you're just fulfilling the task that ultimately we were all given, you know, here in this world. But as Hashem, next week when we pick up, we'll start talking, we'll probably try to do Yud, Yud Aleph, and Yud Beis all together, because they're basically one unit, talking about the five preeminent Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The names include some names that we encounter all the time throughout the literature of Chazal. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai really set the stage for the rejuvenation of Torah after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So that's Hashem. When we pick up next time, we'll talk about that a little bit, and we'll see everybody then.
Thank you so much. Okay.